kickoff touchdown for the Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson goes 108 yards.
No markers.
And the Cardinals strike fast and furious. Here's Jerron Brown in motion to the left. Sets up as a wing and a one-back set. Palmer sidesteps the pocket. Going to screen it to Jerron Brown. He lands for the end zone. He's in for the touchdown. Fitzgerald motions wing right. Snap, play fake, gonna throw into the end zone. The pass is caught for the touchdown.
And Larry Fitzgerald.
Cutler out of the shotgun, takes the snap. They're rushing five. They throw over the middle. It's intercepted. Touchdown, safety, Tony Jefferson. Jay Cutler knocked out of the game in the second quarter. Jimmy Clausen has been in ever since. He is 9 of 15, intercepted once, 56 yards, sacked three times.
The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field.
Are they any good? They suck. It stinks.
Victory for the Cardinals here on the road, 48-23 over the Chicago Bears.
What a difference 1 week, one play, and one strained hamstring has done to Bears fans in Chicago and around the world after that 48-23 loss. As they head into Seattle next week to take on the Seahawks. Oh boy, lots of panicking in Chicago. But we'll try to have some fun here on episode 4 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I am your host, Kevin Fishbane, joined by my co-host, Arthur Arkish. That awesome open put together by our executive producer, Dan Mott. Also have our associate producer, John Solly, on hand, of course. That was Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer on the call for 780 WBBM. And FM 105.9. We're going to do a real brief recap of what happened against Arizona and then turn the page, talk to Seattle Seahawks. We're going to talk to Liz Matthews of ESPN 710 Seattle and then some more Bears talk at the end of the show with Bob Laguerre of the Daily Herald. And of course, Hub Arkish, the closer, will join us to finish up the show. And Arthur, before we get to our three and out, I'm trying to figure out, I don't know if so much of Bears fans are panicking because nobody expected them to be good, but I think people are just very sad.
Yeah, you know, this was always going to be the most difficult, three-game stretch of the season to open, so it was not an ideal situation. John Fox has joked about how he saw the schedule shortly after his arrival, but, the sadness is Jimmy Clausen over Jay Cutler, frankly. The sadness is some of the issues that we all saw a month ago that have now reared their ugly head. I'm thinking about the secondary primarily. I'm thinking about some of the issues along the offensive line. I think there's a reason to be sad. You thought you were going to not have to talk about 48 points and just absolute destructions in the second half after what we saw last year. And here we are in the middle of September already kind of having that familiar refrain.
Well, let's recap what went down by the lake in our weekly three and out.
I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
One, two, five.
Lisa, three.
Three and out. In our three and out, we give you one positive, one negative, and one moment that mattered from the Bears' previous game. Arthur, you're positive.
Yeah, I like the diversity of the run game. Maybe it's a little bit of a cop-out. It's the only thing that's went consistently well for the first 2 weeks, but I thought it was cool to see Adam Gase's introduction of the zone read and the Jeremy Lankford drive and the continued commitment even after they fell behind in the second half. So it may be the one thing this team does well, but at least they're sticking to it and continuing to find ways to build on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I expect we'll see a lot more of that in the coming weeks. I know it wasn't good enough for his contract, but Pernell McPhee played better. He should have gotten that sack on 3rd and 10, but he had a few quarterback hits. He had a pretty good run stop for no gain. He was better. And you saw some more flashes. You saw what he could bring to this defense, but it's got to be more in the coming weeks. Arthur, your biggest negative.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend it was an easy spot for Jimmy Clausen. He's thrown into the game, obviously, after the Cutler injury. But you got two sudden changes. You've got two opportunities on the Cardinals' side of the field, pretty much in the red zone with the muff punt, and then the terrific Jared Allen interception. And to come away with just 6 points, knowing what you're up against, that Cardinals offense, it's 2 weeks in a row where we're talking about missed opportunities. And for all intents and purposes, the game was over at that point, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to think that all the nice things we say about the Bears' running game, and they haven't been able to punch it in from the goal line 2 weeks in a row. I have to go with the penalty yards. 170 tied a franchise record set in 1944. And no, Hub was not the sideline reporter for that game before you guys start asking me. He actually was off that week. He was on a different game. But just the big pass interference penalties, the 6 penalties in the offensive line. And I actually thought the pass protection was pretty good before Cutler got hurt. The players didn't want to admit that the change at quarterback, you know, affected the penalties, but I think it had to have played a role. All right, Arthur, there are a few moments that mattered. What's kind of the one that stuck out for you?
I'm going to go in a different direction. We could talk about the Cutler injury. There's a number of different scenarios we can discuss, but I'm going to go with when the game's already out of hand and John Fox decides to sit down his one core defensive player, Kyle Fuller. I'm going to it only because I hope it becomes a teaching point. I can't say for sure it will, can't say for sure it won't, but I thought it was very interesting that this new regime is no longer going to have these loyalties to guys they didn't draft, obviously. Draft status doesn't matter here anymore, and now I think this becomes one of the most compelling storylines is how does Kyle Fuller respond. He obviously wasn't really up to the task when adversity hit, you know, the second half of last season. We have to hope for a better outcome this time.
Yeah, all the concern about the offense and Jay Cutler, and I think you're right. I think Kyle Fuller's development right now, if you're looking at the long-term big picture, might be the biggest concern of all when you look at this Bears team right now. Looking more kind of at the game, and a little plug to our Chicago football playbook, which you can watch right now on chicagofootball.com, kind of broke down this play. 3rd and 10, Pernell McPhee misses the sack. Jared Allen hits Carson Palmer, but he still gets the ball off to John Brown, who is able to get enough separation from Allen Ball, gets the first down, call plays later, pass interference, and the touchdown. If they got that stop, and the Bears haven't gotten many 3rd and 10s, who knows how many more 3rd and 10s they're going to get this season, but they had a great opportunity right there to get their first sack of the season and to stop the Cardinals right there, get the ball back. Who knows how that would have changed the game, but that was our 3-and-out. Again, we promise you on this show, we will give you the quickest recap. Maybe if the Bears win, just to make the Bears fans happy, we can make it a little bit longer. But we want to move on. Now it is time to turn the page, Arthur, to the Bears-Seahawks game on Sunday at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. The 0-2 Seahawks, kind of surprising, 0-2 Seahawks versus 0-2 Bears. But, of course, Seattle a 14.5-point favorite in that game. Like we do every week to preview the Bears game, we go behind enemy lines. This week, it's with Liz Matthews. All right, Liz Matthews, Seahawks reporter for ESPN 710 in Seattle. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz_Matthews, one T there. Don't get that wrong. Liz, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely, and thanks for getting the spelling of my name right. Appreciate that.
Well, my first question for you about this 0-2 Seahawks team, and Arthur and I opened the show talking about the 0-2 Bears, that Bears fans aren't kind of panicking because they expected the season to be bad, but I don't think they expected what happened on Sunday to be, you know, such like an awful loss. So my question for you about the city of Seattle, are people panicking out there?
Well, of course they are. You know, you go to the Super Bowl back-to-back years, there's going to be some panic even if there's one loss. But I'm going to be honest with you. From the second I saw this schedule come out this season, with or without Cam Chancellor on this roster, I had these guys starting 0-2. They faced arguably two of their toughest opponents. It was on the road. But if there's any team that can bounce back from an 0-2, I think it's the Seattle Seahawks. They really have what it takes to get it together as long as it's locker room kind of doesn't let these sort of distractions get to their head. I think they're going to rebound just fine.
What do you think the impact is? You know, obviously there were was a big deal made, of course, of the acquisition of Jimmy Graham, sending off Max Unger in a draft pick. And I know we'll get to Graham in a minute about the lack of impact he's made. But what about the offensive line? How much do they miss Max Unger? I see Marshawn Lynch is averaging 3.5 yards per carry. That is highly unusual.
Yeah, you know what, you raise a great point there because, you know, people fail to kind of imagine and really understand the impact of that trade was losing the team's full bull center. That's a big deal. They also lost James Carpenter. He left in free agency. You're losing a starting guard there. They're kind of piecemealing these guys together. It was a battle throughout all of training camp. In fact, they didn't name the five starters until the week before the regular season. Tom Cable always has his projects every year, converted over a couple of defensive tackles to the offensive side of the ball. And you'll see that now in the starting center, Drew Nowak. He is a converted college defensive tackle. So it's going to take some games for these guys to find their chemistry.
Well, luckily, Liz, the Bears haven't sacked anyone and haven't really done much in the trenches, so maybe that'll work out well for the Seahawks offensive line to gain some confidence.
I think every team around the league tends to complain about the offensive line, but, you know, if you're going to talk about any position group that you need solid to win these games, it is that offensive line.
That is very true. And Arthur touched on Jimmy Graham, so I'll just give you as simply as I can, what's the deal with Jimmy Graham?
Well, the deal is that Jimmy Graham, and great segue from the offensive line, Jimmy Graham really isn't going to be able to do what Jimmy Graham does until some of these blocking responsibilities are taken from him, until the offensive line really gets settled and Russell Wilson can air it out to his big, new, fancy, shiny new target. You're going to see a little less of him than what people expect. It's so crazy. Coming from New Orleans, such a pass-happy offense, obviously his numbers were going to go down here in Seattle. They are a run-first offense, first and foremost, with Marshawn Lynch. Russell Wilson tells us every week in this press conference, the number one goal is to hand it off to number 24 beast mode, and I think that's what they're going to continue to do. You've seen Graham make more of his appearances in the second half of these games, kind of when these guys go into the locker room and they make their readjustments. But really, this team knows what they have in Jimmy Graham. They're going to use him, and I think he's going to be a big factor no matter where he is and what he's doing on the field.
So, Liz, we've talked about how the offense clearly hasn't hit its stride yet for the various reasons that you've laid out. Here in Chicago, new defensive coordinator Vic Fangio on occasion tended to make Seattle kind of not quite what they wanted to be offensively either. We're still trying to put the feelers out and figure out what exactly Vic Fangio is going to be able to do schematically to help this Bears defense. Can you kind of fill us in a little bit on what he was able to do twice per year when he was still with the Niners and how that worked out in the rivalry?
Well, yeah, you know what? Oh, it's so crazy. Isn't it funny how these each year so different in the NFL? In fact, the 49ers just seem to be such a non-factor in this division now. It's just insane. But again, going back to that run game, if you're going to stop this offense, if you're going to stop the Seattle Seahawks, you have got to stop the run game. And remember, the run game here in Seattle is not just Marshawn Lynch. You've also got the franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson, who also has himself a set of legs. You know, he's the team's leading rusher this week in at Lambeau Field. He's going to continue to run. So the D-line has to be prepared to deal with that. You've got to focus on the run. But therein lies the complication, because then who's open out there is Jimmy Graham. A lot to watch for these defenses coming, especially to CenturyLink Field, where the crowd is also a huge factor.
We're joined by Liz Matthews. ESPN 710 Seattle covers the Seahawks out there. And Liz, we'll switch to the other side of the football. People think Seahawks, they think about that defense. And obviously the big story out there has been the absence of Cam Chancellor. Without having to talk about the, you know, dollars and cents with that situation on the field, how has the impact been? What have you seen from week one to week two and how they've managed playing without him?
Well, boy, I mean, it's really scary. You lose one quarter of your legion, a boom, and talk about getting the fans to panic. That's really sort of done that. The locker room, however, has done a good job of kind of maintaining Carroll's mentality, a really next man up mentality. You see, week one, they started Deion Bailey at the strong safety position. This past week at Lambeau Field, they went a different direction and just started with Sean Shedd. So I think they're sort of figuring out who's going to be the best there. But, man, everybody wants Cam Chancellor back on the field. But if he's not there, he's just got to move forward and still working on the best fit of that position.
We saw last week, I think it was Marshawn Lynch was donning the Cam Chancellor jersey in practice. You said that everyone wants him there. Of course they do. And of course, if there's any locker room that would seem to be able to weather kind of any distractions that come with this holdout, it would be Pete Carroll's group. But have you noticed any sulking? I mean, I know it's a tight-knit bunch. Has there been any impact, any waves made kind of off the field that are noticeable with Cam not being there?
Well, I think it might be a different story here if the Seahawks had started the season 2-0 as opposed to losing both games on the road. I don't think that the players themselves are actually blaming any of these losses because they certainly weren't on the absence of Cam Chancellor. Certainly that was a factor, but not at all the reason they lost these two ball games. The fans are pretty torn here, you know. They really want and feel like this is a unit and everybody needs to be on that field. And battle together. But again, if Cam Chancellor is not going to make an appearance, the locker room just basically has to man up and go play the ball game. I know that there's been very little communication. In fact, I don't even know that the players are doing much more than texting back and forth with Cam Chancellor. And it's actually my understanding that he's not even in the state. Don't quote me on that. So I think that everybody's really trying to move forward, and boy, they cannot wait to get back to their home stadium and play a game here on Sunday. I'll tell you that much.
All right, well, Liz, I'll wrap up with this, and I feel like we've spent this interview talking about a lot of the Seahawks' negatives, but they are still the two-time NFC defending champions, a lot of talent on their field. You mentioned their first game at CenturyLink Field. I'm sure those fans are going to be hungry. It's loud. Can you think of a better gift for the Seahawks than the 0-2 Bears led by Jimmy Clausen?
No. You hate to see these injuries, because really can happen to any team, but, you know, I will say this. If the Seahawks drop this game at home to Jimmy Clausen's Bears, that's going to be a rough one for these fans. That's going to be a really tough pill to swallow. But you know what? You got to take these teams as they come to you. The Seahawks are one of the teams around the league who have been relatively, I don't want to use the word blessed like everybody does, hashtag blessed on Twitter, but they really have been as far as injuries this season. You saw that Sherman was able to rebound from the Super Bowl. Earl Thomas was able to rebound after having no appearances during the preseason. But these injury bugs can bite any team at any time. You saw what happened to Romo this week as well. So, man, you lose your starting quarterback, and that's really tough for any team. I don't know if I can name anybody who would be pleased with punch with their second man up there.
Well, I'll leave Aaron Rodgers to decide how hashtag blessed Russell Wilson is on that.
So you got my joke?
Of course. all right, Liz, thanks so much. That's Liz Matthews, ESPN 710 Seahawks reporter. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz_Matthews, MATHEWS. Thanks again, Liz.
Hey, you got it, and that should be interesting on Sunday.
All righty. So, Arthur, now that we've learned about the Seahawks a little bit more from Liz and kind of breaking down a Seahawks team that's having some struggles, we might as well go unit by unit. Every week when we preview this game, we break down the matchups. And you're up first, Bears rushing offense versus Seahawks run defense.
Yeah, well, as we discussed, it has clearly been the one thing that has worked well for the Bears, and I think there's quite a bit of similarity in the schemes that the two teams want to run with the stretch zone plays and trying to get to the perimeter. That's where the Bears have done a lot of their damage. But, you know, Matt Forte will never be mistaken for a burner. He's capable of making some big plays. And at the same time, you have to wonder if Seattle's team speed could potentially become an issue here. The second level is just brimming with speed and guys like KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner. So this is clearly an area where the Bears need to have an edge if they're going to have any chance to win. But you have to think the Seahawks and their physicality, their speed may hold a slight advantage even over the Bears' biggest strength. The game's biggest mismatch, I don't think anyone is going to argue with this. It has to be the Bears' passing offense. Obviously, Jimmy Clausen led this week against Seattle in that Legion of Boom, or three quarters of that Legion of Boom. Kevin, what have you noticed in Cam Chancellor's absence and what Jimmy Clausen may be able to get accomplished there?
Well, you know, Arthur, when we do this, we're breaking down who has the edge in each matchup, which, of course, you can find in your Chicago football insert in the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald on Thursdays. And here's what I've noticed. Edge Seahawks. It's one of the biggest advantages I can remember. I've been writing these for three seasons now. Although I will say this. I think back to 49ers-Bears last year. And how lopsided that matchup looked heading in after the Bears lost the Bills. So, but I mean, I think here's the thing: Jimmy Clausen has three practices to get ready for this game. He's got a full week of game playing to get ready, get used to these receivers. If Alshon Jeffrey's healthy, that helps. I expect to see a lot of Martellus Bennett. You have to use him a ton, and Eddie Royal and Matt Forte. I don't see him making long throws on the outside of the sidelines. He just doesn't have the arm strength for it. But obviously, this edge goes to the Seahawks overwhelmingly. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Seahawks rushing offense with Marshawn Lynch against the Bears run defense, which has not been that bad. Zero carries allowed of 20 yards or more. So that's one positive for the Bears so far. Arthur, break down this matchup.
Yeah, you're right. The Bears have actually, you know, made some small gains there. I do think this is going to be a huge test, regardless of how much Seattle's offensive line has struggled thus far, and it has been plenty, as Liz laid out here a little bit ago. In this part of the game, I'm going to be looking at the Bears' inside linebackers. Obviously, the defensive front is going to have to show what they can do, and I think we've seen some flashes from guys like Jarvis Jenkins and Eddie Goldman. But, you know, for my money, there's not a more physical back in the game playing right now than Marshawn Lynch, and I think that most would probably say that maybe that's kind of the shortcoming of the Bears inside linebacking tandem right now, particularly with Shea McClellan. So you wonder how the collisions in the middle are going to be, and if they're going to be able to get off blocks and kind of try and keep Lynch contained. Like I said, he's only averaging 3.5 yards per carry. So there is an opportunity here, but you know, it's the defending NFC champs, and we've only seen 2 weeks worth. I still have to give the edge to Seattle here. We'll see if the Bears can do anything to change that. And then we'll close out the Who Has the Edge section with Russell Wilson, the blessed one, as you mentioned, and the Seahawks passing offense against the Bears passing defense, if I can even call it a defense. I think that might be a stretch at this point. You know, Seattle wanted to get Russell Wilson to be more of a pocket passer this year after giving him the big contract, but the offensive line hasn't allowed it. He's been on the run quite a bit. He's been taking a lot of hits. Is this an opportunity for the pass rush to finally heat up and maybe take a little bit of the heat off of guys like Kyle Fuller, Alan Ball, who have been regular whipping boys here in Chicago?
You know, it's funny because when I looked at this specific matchup, 4 weeks ago, maybe back in training camp, I would have thought this was the only way the Bears could get an edge in this game because, you know, if you keep Russell Wilson in the pocket, he doesn't have great weapons. They haven't figured out a way how to use Jimmy Graham well. We talked earlier about the offensive line. This is where they could take advantage. Kyle Fuller, maybe Antrel rolls a ball hawk. You get the pass rush going. But obviously, we haven't seen any of those things. So, you know, unless Pernell McPhee and Jared Allen have the games of their lives and each get a few sacks, and Kyle Fuller's benching last week really sparks him. And you know, the other thing too, Arthur, is the safeties haven't been involved in this game. So, you know, it's something that we're going to have to kind of wait to see. But obviously, big edge here to the Seahawks passing offense. Well, as we get ready to close the show, last 10, 15 minutes, we bring in our closer, of course, from the bullpen, Hub Arkish. And Hub, Arthur and I just talking about this Bears-Seahawks matchup, trying to decide if there's anywhere on the field they have an edge. Couldn't really think of one. Instead, we just kind of talked about how Jimmy Graham's not getting the ball.
Well, I mean, there are two things. First of all, I heard you towards the end, and as far as Jimmy Graham, I've got a real easy tip for Daryl Bevel. Throw him the damn football. I mean, you know, you traded your all-pro center for him. You've now got a problem on the offensive line as a result of the deal, and Jimmy Graham gets targeted, what, twice? You know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what they're doing. You know, and as far as the rest of it, at the end of the day, the Bears, you know, without Jay Cutler, where are you going to find a matchup that they're going to win? I mean, where are you going to take the Bears over the Seattle Seahawks? I just don't know that there is one. I think it's fascinating. I know Bears fans don't want to hear it. I thought Cutler was playing really good football until he got hurt. You know, obviously the pick six is unacceptable. We don't know if that was his fault or Marty Bennett's. But without him and Jimmy Clausen at quarterback, I never understood why Clausen was brought back here during the offseason to begin with. And Lord knows it wasn't in the hopes of having him ready to start against the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, I don't know much about the Seahawks long snapper, but maybe there's where the Bears could have an edge. All right, to help us continue to break this game down, Bears versus Seahawks, we're joined now by Bob Laguerre, Bears beat writer for the Daily Herald. You could also read him in our Chicago football insert in the Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, and Sun-Times on Thursdays. Bob, I'll throw the question to you. Is there anywhere the Bears can get an edge on Sunday in Seattle?
Kevin, I don't think there really is anything I can – I mean, if Kyle Long were at right guard, they would have a better right guard. I think Matt Forte might be a wash with Marshawn Lynch. Other than that, I don't see any edge they would have. You know, they're already 14-point dogs, and I doubt that line's going to go down between now and Sunday.
You know, Bob, the irony of it is if they were healthy, the one place where teams get an advantage over Seattle is at wide receiver. And yet, you know, with this Bears group of receivers, you can't argue that, and they don't play each other anyway. You look at the matchup of the Bears secondary against Seattle's wideouts. This is a place where, you know, if they have an epiphany of sorts, if Kyle Fuller finds himself, you know, if Antrel Roll has a big game, you know, maybe you can get yourself a standoff there, because the Seahawks just aren't special at wide receiver. But that's about as close as I can come to finding a matchup I could live with.
Yeah, the Seahawks wide receivers aren't very good, but as we've seen, the Bears secondary is probably worse than that. As you said, though, wide receiver against wide receiver, if Alshon Jeffrey's 100%, yeah, the Bears maybe have an edge there. Even if Alshon Jeffrey plays, I don't think there's any way he's going to be 100%. So, I think it's going to be a long day for the Bears.
Bob, through two games and then looking into Seattle, is there a player or a unit or something that you see as a big positive and you're looking forward to seeing that part develop? Because at this point, these guys really got to find these young players and figure out who's going to be the building blocks of this team. Obviously, Kyle Fuller doesn't look like one right now, but who are some of the positives that you've seen through two games?
Well, you know, people forget how young Pernell McPhee is. He's only 26, and he was the guy who absolutely showed up in the last game, maybe the only one other than, you know, Jared Allen had a nice play, but Pernell McPhee had some quarterback pressures. You know, obviously, he's not a guy who's going to do it by himself. I think on a good team without any weaknesses across the board like the Bears have, yeah, maybe he's a difference maker. At this point, he isn't a difference maker by himself when he's surrounded by so much mediocrity. After one more game, you know, the Bears are going to talk about getting Jeremiah Ratliff back, and, you know, really, a 34-year-old nose tackle is going to make a huge difference in your defense. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he makes them better. I think Eddie Goldman has shown a little bit, and he's getting some on-the-job training. So maybe they get better with Jeremiah Ratliff in there, but, you know, that would get him from being poor to mediocre, maybe, if Ratliff comes back and he's 100% healthy.
You know, Bobby, you kind of have to wonder when you realize the issues that the Bears have at inside linebacker, and they've got big issues there. Adrian Amos hasn't been horrible, but he's still just a fifth-round rookie starting at safety. Antrell Roll was more active early in the game Sunday, but he does appear maybe a quarter step slower than he's been in his Pro Bowl seasons. Is there really any reason for Seattle to do anything but just bang away at the middle of that Bears defense with Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't run it 40 times against them. I don't know if Eagle Ferguson's going to be back or not. He seemed like he was playing pretty well against Green Bay. That would help. I don't know if it'll help enough. But like you said earlier, I would want to get Jimmy Graham as involved in the offense as I could as soon as possible because, you know, they gave up something to get him. They don't have great wide receivers. He's, you know, it seemed like toward the end of that Packers game, the only way they moved the ball was Russell Wilson running. I know they don't want to do that throughout a 16-game schedule. So, yeah, I would run it a lot. But, yeah, I would definitely want to get Jimmy Graham more involved than he has been to this point.
All right, Bob, before I ask you for your pick and wrap this up, I want to kind of go in the Wayback Machine. One of the things we do on this podcast is every once in a while we poke a little bit of fun at how long Hub has covered the Bears. And you've also covered them for, 20 years now, Bob?
It's actually about 22. Yeah.
22 years. So I'm going to ask you this. Last year was obviously probably the biggest debacle you've ever covered, but talent-wise, there was some talent on that team. What is the worst team talent-wise, and how about, I'm curious your take too, the worst talent-wise Bears team that you covered?
You know, it's hard to differentiate between I think it was 4 and maybe 5 years in a row where no player from Dave Wannstedt's team made the Pro Bowl. It was a 4 or 5 year drought, and rightfully so. I mean, nobody was even considered. I don't think anybody was even close. So it's hard to pick and choose because there were a lot of 4 and 12s in there, and they were all pretty similar.
I thought you were going to ask Bob who the best editor he ever had was. I think, did we give you your first NFL job at Pro Football Weekly?
Yes, yeah.
You don't have to put me on the list.
NFL coverage, we're talking over 30 years on my part.
But we're not counting, Bob. Don't worry.
No, yeah, we're just complimenting your experience.
I didn't see them playing leather helmets, but I heard about it when I started.
I think Bob nailed it. Obviously, I go back a little further than that. I started on the beat in 77, and they were pretty bad at that time. Jim Finks had just started rebuilding the team. But I was watching growing up I was 16 years old. I'd just gotten a driver's license when they went 1-15, and then even managed to lose the coin flip and not get Terry Bradshaw. So I guess I'd have to count that team in there.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Hub, because I did tell our listeners early in the show you were not on the sidelines for that 1944 game.
No.
When they had 170 penalty yards, and neither were you, Bob. Really quickly, your prediction for Sunday's game.
I am picking the Seahawks 31-13, and with Jimmy Clausen in there, that 13 might be a stretch, but I'm assuming they're going to try to run the ball a lot and just move the chains as best they can, so a couple of Robbie Gould's field goals, and maybe one touchdown. I don't know how, but I don't think Seattle will have a problem moving on that defense. And to me, I don't really envision any way that it can be a close game.
Well, I imagine that'll be a pretty popular pick. Bob, thanks again for joining us tonight.
Okay, Kevin. Take care.
Bob Laguerre, Bears beat writer for the Daily Herald, and we'll get to our picks and a player to watch in a couple minutes. But you know, one of the things we talked about, and Arthur brought this up, the Seahawks offensive line. If the Bears actually had a pass rush and you know, had some help on the defensive line, that could be one area that they exploit. But you know, because the offensive line's been a little shaky for Seattle, but it's hard to how can you put any confidence in the Bears pass rush?
Well, you know, again, the Seahawks are a puzzle to me. I mean, they've got this kid Britt who had a pretty good year as a rookie out of Missouri last year at tackle. And they move him inside, and why you're messing with a kid who started as well as he did. J.R. Sweezy's not a guard either, you know, and they've got him playing inside. Okung, of course, is a Pro Bowl left tackle. The center has been a real problem for him. He traded Max Unger. Oh, we won't worry about it. I think that when you are as good as the Seahawks have been for a few years, there's an arrogance that develops, and you don't do it on purpose, but I think it happens in the front office with the coaching staff, and we've still got a lot of great players. We can plug guys in. It doesn't work that way in the NFL, and the reality is, you know, there's a reason they show up and play every Sunday. You got to get Ego Ferguson back. You've got to come up with a few, and we know Vic Fangio hates blitzing. That's one of the great misconceptions around, you know, Chicago. Is, oh, he's going to come and blitz your ears. He doesn't like to blitz. What he does is he sends four guys from different places. He's going to have to get more creative with who he sends where, what combinations he puts together, be willing to blitz once or twice, and that is somewhere where they could exploit the Seahawks a little bit. Now, I think that maybe just keeps it closer. I don't think there's enough there that the Bears are something going to upset them, but, you know, McPhee was very active last week. Jared Allen can still rush the passer. You get Will Sutton in certain situations with a great first step. That may be an area where they can cause some disruption.
And I can tell you this from going back and watching. If Shea McCloud and Christian Jones are going to come on a blitz up the middle like they did a couple times, they're going to have to get home. I mean, it was Arizona just completely stonewalled those two on a couple big plays. We're going to wrap this show like we do every week. We each give you one player that we're going to keep an eye on for the Bears, maybe one key player if the Bears are going to pull off the upset, and then we're going to give you go around the room and give you our predictions. Arthur Arkush is back with us. Arthur, who is your Bears player to watch on Sunday in Seattle?
Yeah, guys, I'm going to go with Antrell Roll. He was brought in to stabilize the secondary. He was brought in for his leadership. I don't think there's a more maligned unit on the Bears right now than the secondary. And if he hasn't been active in the first 2 weeks, we've talked about how Seattle needs to get Jimmy Graham involved. A lot of that's going to fall on Antrell Roll. So he better be active and really good this week if the Bears defense is going to stick around.
Hub?
I would keep an eye on Jeremy Langford. I don't think that Matt Forte is in any jeopardy. He's off to a great start. He's still hopeful for another contract. He obviously can still be a big-time back in the NFL. But, you know, you bring Langford off the bench for the third possession of the game at the end of the first quarter on Sunday. He gets six carries. He scores his first NFL touchdown. You're very much in the game. And he disappears. We don't see him again. Didn't touch the football again after that. You match speed with speed. And that is what makes the Seattle defense so special. I think they're going to lead with Forte. I think they're going to go bang with Langford. And if he gets open once or twice, you know, with their holes in the secondary due to the Chancellor holdout and some guys being banged up, I think that they're going to have to get some production out of Langford to keep this thing close.
And you can argue Langford, you know, maybe outside Matt Forte, if Jeffrey's not playing his most dynamic weapon, mm-hmm. you have on the offensive side of the ball. Mine is Christian Jones. I mentioned him earlier. Someone's got to make a splash play in that front seven. Someone in the inside. I think the Seahawks team's going to attack the middle of the field more than the Packers and Cardinals did. It's going to give Christian Jones an opportunity, whether it's stopping Marshawn Lynch or trying to make a play in coverage against their tight ends. He's got to show some of the athleticism we see, but he hasn't really been able to make an impact play. All right, it's time for our picks, and I have a funny feeling I know what everyone's picking, but I'll still humor all the listeners, and we'll go through. We start with our associate producer, John Solly.
I'm going to go with Seahawks 34, Bears 9. I don't see the Bears getting into the
end zone. Wow, single digits for the Bears, says John Sally. Clearly a Bears hater. Go after him on Twitter, at John_Sally, S-A-H-L-Y. Dan Mott, our executive producer, your pick.
I'm going Seahawks 38, Bears 6. I think that, goal will put up a few points. I don't see the Bears scoring a touchdown in this one.
All right, Arthur, is there any hope in Bears land?
No, I'm going with a similar prediction. I don't see the Bears finding the end zone either. I think the defense at least keeps them at 30. I'm going to say 30-12. It's get well day for the Seahawks in their home opener.
Hub?
I was going to have Seattle pitching a shutout originally. I had written down 34-0 because I am really disturbed by Jimmy Clausen at quarterback. I don't understand why he's there. I don't think he can play the position well enough at this level. But then I remembered, Seattle gave up 34, I guess, week one in overtime to St. Louis. They gave up 27 the other night, you know, against the Packers. This is not the ferocious Seattle defense that we're used to. So I'm going to say the Bears somehow stumble or bumble into 10 points. I've got it Seattle 34, the Bears 10.
Well, I guess I'm the optimist in the room, which is comes after last week I was the one to pick the Cardinals to win, albeit by 1 point. I have Seahawks 24, Bears 10, which means if the spread stays at 14.5, that's a Bears cover right there because of the hook. I don't know how the Bears are going to get 10 points. I just don't feel a lot of confidence in the Seahawks offense, even as bad as the Bears defense has looked. I'm putting some faith in Vic Fangio here that they're going to mix it up enough to keep the Seahawks score low.
Can I throw one other thing here that I missed the first part of the show, but I don't think anybody's talking about it. Seattle's been on the road the first 2 weeks.
They have.
This is a different football team, and they get home in front of that 12th man. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame. Yeah, and so a lot of the bumbling and incompetence that we're looking for from Seattle, I think some of that's going to go away this Sunday. That may be the scariest part of all for the Bears, that they got to go play them there.
Well, we thought that after last year, some of these blowout losses were over with, and might get a rude awakening on Sunday in Seattle. But we'll see what happens. That'll do it for Episode 4 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news and analysis, you can visit us at chicagofootball.com and follow all our Bears content on Twitter at Bears_insider. We also would like to remind you that our podcast will be available on iTunes, so please head over and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. It's Chevy Truck Month, and there's a Silverado with your name on it. Check out all of it, the Chevy truck selections, at ChevyDriveChicago.com today, and drive what Dan Hampton drives. All right, our thank yous to go around. Executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Solly, Hub Arkish, our closer, my co-host Arthur Arkish, our guest Bob Laguerre, and Liz Matthews. That does it for everyone here at Chicago Football. We'll talk next week and see how bad it was in Seattle for the Bears. Remember to follow everything at ChicagoFootball.com.